every single marketer and every single brand should be attempting to earn a disproportionate share of conversation.
If you work for an organization where they say, bring us a chart that goes up and to the right, you have a challenge.
Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is, I don't know which half.
I am here to inspire you, to excite you, to motivate you, to transform you, to energize you.
Hello and welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. This episode features an interview with Noreen Galstian, the CMO at SADA, an IT services and consulting company that helps customers move to the cloud and then innovate and explore what's possible on the cloud. In this episode, Noreen discusses fostering ongoing conversations with customers and focusing on getting customers for life. She also dives into the importance of providing value at each stage of the customer journey and meeting customers where they are. But before we get into it, here's a brief word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Qualified. If you're a revenue team that runs your business on Salesforce, Qualified will accelerate your lead generation, pipeline, and ultimately revenue. Learn more at qualified.com.
And now please enjoy this interview between Noreen Galstian, CMO at SADA, and your host, Ian Faison.
Welcome to Pipeline Visionaries. I'm Ian Faison, CEO of Caspian Studios, and today I'm joined by a special guest. Noreen, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you, Ian. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining. Excited to have you on the show. Chat marketing, chat pipeline, and everything in between. And today's show, as always, is brought to you by our friends at Qualified. You can go to qualified.com to learn about the number one conversational sales and marketing platform for companies that use Salesforce. Head over to qualified.com to learn more. First question, Noreen, how did you get started in marketing?
Actually, I got interested in marketing in my first marketing course, Marketing 101 in college. And I went into college undecided, took the course and fell in love with it and decided to pivot to marketing management as my major. And my entire career has been in marketing ever since. And I got my first job in marketing for a fashion industry. Then pivoted into tech and now tech services, cloud services. So yeah, it's been a fun journey.
And then flash forward to today, tell us a little bit about your current role.
So I'm the chief marketing officer at SADA. I've been with the company for 11 years now. SADA was founded in 2000. We're a cloud consultancy and services provider. We're a Google Cloud partner, a multi-year winner of Cloud Partner of the Year for Google Cloud. That's all we do for solutions and services across the entire Google Cloud platform. We're based in Los Angeles, but we have offices across North America, as well as UKI and India. So we're a global service provider.
And of course, the big news recently acquired by Insight. So it's been quite the ride for you.
Yes, we were acquired by Insight Enterprises in December, so all still very new for us. SADA still functions as an independent business unit within Insight.
Let's get to our first segment, the trust tree.
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the circle of trust.
What, I thought we were in the trust tree in the nest, are we not?
Where you go and feel honest and trusted and share those deepest, darkest marketing secrets. Tell us more about SADA and who are your customers.
SADA's main customers are enterprises and organizations looking to transform in the cloud. And what does that mean? That means, you know, if you have an on-prem environment and you're looking to go to a cloud environment, whether it's for innovation, transformation across, you know, a global business unit, productivity and collaboration for security purposes, overall modernization of your infrastructure, SADA is your go-to for everything Google Cloud related. We also have public sector customers, so a lot of government, state and local agencies, higher education. Again, it's all about, you know, getting them on the cloud and then helping them innovate and really transform on the cloud once they're there. And the stages of growth and transformation when once you're in a cloud are really endless. And now with a lot of the Gen AI aspects of things, everyone wants to learn what more is possible on the cloud. And that's what we're here to do.
Yeah. And what does that buying committee look like?
Primary decision makers are still the CIOs and CTOs, but now it's transitioning quite a bit into line of business. More CMOs have technology budgets. The more and more CMOs like me are able to make decisions around what the data means, how to really decipher it and make it something useful for decision making and go to market strategies, how to better serve your customers. CFOs even, you know, are part of the decision making process for more insights into cost structures, opportunities for growth. So the decision makers are changing quite a bit nowadays.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about, you know, your marketing strategy and how you go after that business.
We really have the three, you know, main motions: drive awareness, bring demand gen and engagement, and then nurture to a close process. And once we nurture to a close, we don't stop there, right? There's an ongoing conversation had with the customer. We really pride ourselves in this notion of customers for life. So it's not just a one-shot project and then we're done with the customer. It's really looking at the overall trajectory of what the customer wants to achieve, their long-term business goals, even the goals of the, you know, individual advocate or the committee, and being able to then set a roadmap of how to get them there. So it's ongoing engagement, ongoing education and information, and then being able to support all of their needs in the technology and cloud specifically moving forward. So anytime there's new initiatives or new products released, we're always bringing it back to the customer so that they have the right advisement to make clear-cut decisions best for them. So the tactics are really driving awareness, making sure everyone's, you know, understanding of the Google Cloud ecosystem, the SaaS services around it, driving demand and engagement through various models, whether it's, you know, events and digital or in-person. Content is a key part of the thought leadership that we drive, and education piece, even training our customer staff members and engineers on all of the tools and solutions available, and then continuing to nurture them through relationship building, trust building, and the experts that we have in-house that are helping them guide through that journey process to get the most out of the cloud.
What does your marketing team look like?
Marketing team really has the demand gen component, which also encompasses our field marketing team members. They work hand in hand with the field sales representatives. And then we have our content marketing team, which also has all of our storytelling, our main, you know, white papers, all of the sales enablement content that's developed all sit within that team. We have our PR and social team, very active in making sure how we communicate externally, internally is in sync. And also all of our multiple social channels are engaged at that time. And then we have the creative team. All of our creative is done in-house, both on graphic design and videography. We, you know, really produce everything in-house. That helps the consistency in our brand and being able to really carry that globally.
Very cool. Any other thoughts on strategy before we move on?
I think that, you know, the strategy really has to be, the marketing strategy really has to be in sync with sales. And it is something that should be developed together to make sure that you're both aligned on what we're trying to achieve, the target accounts that you're trying to go after, what is, you know, what you're launching, the sales team is enabled to sell it. So it's really important to strategize and align and get buy-in in advance before you set the motions for go-to-market.
I know that part of the acquisition process is always crazy. Such a fascinating sort of like change in marketing with the parent company and other sort of like, you know, types of business units and all that. I'm sure you're, you know, in the middle of all of it and makes planning a little bit crazier.
Yeah. I mean, luckily, you know, we are still an independent unit, you know, so still have our go-to-market strategy, but we're certainly looking at opportunities where we can collaborate together, go to market together? Where does it make sense to bring solutions to customers that are looking across an overall, you know, multi-cloud solutions environment? So being able to, you know, provide Google, Microsoft, Amazon where it makes sense to customers, and also solutions around security, more, you know, Gen AI and data. So we are looking at those opportunities to collaborate. It's still very early in our engagement. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we see a lot of that changing in the near future.
All right, let's go to our next segment, the playbook.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Where you open up the playbook and talk about the tactics that help you win. What are your three channels or tactics that are your most uncuttable budget items?
Well, I would say most uncuttable really for us, especially post-COVID, is events. Events and conferences have come back with a lot of rigor. Everybody is definitely ready to go back to face-to-face and engaging in person. So we're definitely doubling down on a lot of the in-person events and conferences. Digital investments are still very key to our overall strategy, and whether that's obviously really optimizing our website from SEO perspective, paid ads, social, you know, ads, as well as making sure that you have the entire kind of content to demand gen engine working off your digital channels to bring leads into the funnel, and then having the tools and the marketing tools are critical to continue to measure, segment, and continue that nurture process in your workflows. So I would say, you know, events, digital, and tools. You got to have the right marketing tools.
Yeah. When you say events, like the bigger events, more small batch, blend of both, what, like owned events, partner events, what are you thinking there?
We host majority of our events. Conferences are smaller part of our investments. Majority of our events are very high touch experiential events that we do to our top C-level customers, kind of executive to executive relationship building and engagement. We've seen that really work for us, especially in this, you know, model that I told you is customers for life. You really need that trust and relationship to be built from the top down. And then we create environments where there's learning, right? Again, really diving deep into that awareness and informative aspects of it. So teaching people how to use the tools, see the demonstrations, go into deep dive workshops, all done in person. We do a lot of those with Google Cloud directly, and we do roadshows. We hit city by city, invite all of our customers as well as our prospects to come learn. And those have really worked well for us as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd imagine that you have obviously a pretty tight relationship with Google Cloud, considering it's your business. What are those types of events? How are they different when you're partnering with a partner that's that big and important to y'all?
We are aligned in our target accounts. We are aligned in our goals. You know, they have greenfield customers they want to go after. They have customers that they want to grow. Majority of them are with us. Mm-hmm. So we engage at the regional level with the regional sales team, with the regional marketing teams, and be able to say, well, this is kind of the core solution we feel is important for this particular set of audiences. And we bring in our expert speakers. They have their expert speakers. We have ours. So there's a good balance between the two of us as partners. We're each responsible for, you know, getting the audience, the right audience there at the event, and making sure that there's engaging conversations happening. And certainly, you know, customers always want to know, like, oh, you must be important if Google Cloud is sponsoring this event with you and is bringing their top experts to this event. So I think it speaks to the tight relationship that we have.
I'm always fascinated by how, you know, partner events are, when done well, are so good. And when they're done poorly, it's not great. I guess that's all events. But specifically with partner events, in a time where, you know, people might be more cost constrained in tech, we're leveraging, you know, other people's networks is super valuable, and vice versa, you know?
Right. And, you know, I think coming together as a team and sharing those resources is critical in any partnership, right? And making sure that you are aligned on your goals. So there is no awkwardness or competitive scenario and you know, one person going in one direction in the content and scope while another is, you know, completely off from what you're trying to achieve. Luckily, we've been able to really define all of that right from the beginning, and it's been much, much smoother. Especially when we're hitting the road with experts, you know, and hitting several cities back to back, you kind of have to have a well-oiled machine and people who are on board with that.
Yeah. Do you see that being really important to go on those type of road shows rather than trying to get people to, you know, fly somewhere for, you know, those type of events?
Absolutely. I think you have to kind of go where the customer is. While travel budgets are being cut everywhere right now, right? Yeah. Everybody's very budget conscious. You have to be mindful of everyone's time and make sure that you're bringing value to them. When we go on these, you know, road shows, we're really investing, right, a lot of time into putting these together and making sure that when the customer is coming to sit with us for 2, 3, 4 hours, some of these, you know, longer workshops are, you know, half a day, that we're bringing value to them at every stage. And they appreciate that. They appreciate the fact that we're coming to them and they're not having to take time out of their schedule to fly across the country to sit in sessions that may not be relevant for them because they're too general at some of the big conferences, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that idea of the roadshow. We've heard a few people sort of talk about really taking it to the road and hitting some smaller cities that don't necessarily get as much love or, you know, getting, you know, geographically, it's just so much easier to hop in a car and pay for some gas than, you know, hotel and, you know, lodging and all the meals out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And, you know, while you're there, you know, many times the customers then want to do dinner, they yeah. continue the conversation, right? So again, that all goes back to the relationship building and providing a very comfortable, intimate environment where you can have, you know, solid conversations with them.
Any best practices there on those type of events or things that you've been doing that really worked well?
I think you really have to take a look at where your accounts are. And now it's very difficult because so many people moved, right? Nobody's just at their headquarters anymore. During COVID, a lot of people moved away and they work remotely. So a company that's headquartered in the Bay Area may actually have their decision makers now sitting in Detroit. And you really have to have a good understanding of where are your decision makers sitting, not just going off of where is the headquarters of a company, and being able to define which concentrated cities make sense for you to go out and be in person. And are you going to target a large enough pool of people in that city to make sense for that event, you know, 3-4 hour investment that's happening. And so we've defined a lot of that early on, just again, to make sure that we're targeting the right decision makers in the right cities, and then being able to work with our partners to collaborate on the content piece of it and to help drive that awareness.
Yeah, it's like one of the things that has struck me with this sort of thing is, you know, in a world where out thinking and maneuvering your competition, you know, is needed. It's like, well, if we're going to go to the smaller city or do the smaller event and maybe there's smaller people there, maybe we can figure out a way to resource it, you know, better, et cetera. They're like, that's where there's opportunity, right? It's like, that's the extra mile, you know, that there's no traffic on. That's one of the places in events where it's like, you know, go doing the smaller batch stuff, I think makes sense.
Yeah. And the smaller batch stuff, you know, it's a lot easier to have those conversations when you have their entire focus. If you just wait to go meet them at the larger conferences, you know, you're competing with 20, 30 yeah. other people, right? Trying to get their attention. And maybe you're only going to get half hour with them, you know, while they're running around trying to meet as many people as possible. So when you go to them, you have a more of a captive audience.
Any things that are your most cuttable budget items, any things that you're not going to be investing in next year or the course of this year, or maybe just something that's fading away?
I think swag. Swag is an area that...
Really?
Yeah, we have cut back on swag. That's not to say all swag. I think we're just looking at more quality swag when we go on to these, you know, road events and have these high touch experiences. We want to really bring quality, useful swag to them and not just tchotchkes you pick up at large conferences and, you know, take them to your kids and nobody really pays attention to it afterwards, right? So, you know, I think that those are areas where you can really cut costs, and also printed collateral. I think before it was really important to have a lot of printed materials to pass out everywhere you went, and nobody's looking to carry paper anymore. It's really providing them with the digital access to what they need, easy way to find it, and having the right follow-up so that you get that information in front of them after.
What swag is working?
I think swag that's working, you can't go wrong with apparel. People love it, whether it's t-shirts, hoodies. We get a lot of hoodie requests quite often. And also, you know, water or coffee mugs are still very popular, and people have one in the car, they have one in the office, they have one at home, you know. So there's definitely no shortage of requests for those. But quality stuff, I think that's what people want. If it's quality, especially if it's an Ambrian stuff, they're going to keep it.
That's right. Get those Stanley quenchers and the Yetis going. Okay, what about experiments and experimental budget? Where are you spending that extra 5, 10% tucked away for something new?
We try a lot of new approaches to the relationship building, as I mentioned. And most recently, we tried an executive dinner called Cloud Food and Gratitude. And we bring an author. His name is Chris Shembra. He has written several books, bestsellers, and it's Gratitude Through the Hard Times. And we have him run the dinner, and it's a simple, you know, question. And we don't necessarily talk business or selling or pitching or anything like that. It's really opening up around the table of executives in a trusted environment and space. And it's very intimate, 10 to 12 people max, where you are talking about what you're grateful for. You know, what does gratitude mean to you? Who would you think in your life that you haven't? And we experimented with this during virtual, you know, COVID times, and then it worked really well. And we decided, well, why don't we take this into in-person around the country? And it's been a great experience. So I think you always have to have those budget investments to try something new, even if it is for a small group of audience. But for us, you know, getting a round table of 10 executives, C-level, to pour out their hearts and share their challenges is a huge win for us to develop those relationships. So we're continuing to experiment with those types of opportunities.
How do you view your website?
Our website is really demand gen. I should say awareness and demand gen. So we want to make sure customers that are looking for cloud solutions are getting the information they need the fastest way possible. Right? Getting them to that information really has taken us through several rounds of evaluations of when they come to the homepage, how do we get them what they need to, you know, download a piece or fill out a form or join an event, everything to kind of drive to an action or to an engagement, and making sure that we have a search that works and is pulling up the information they need, again, faster. And while, you know, you try to keep your audience on your website for, you know, as long as you can, we try to give them the information quickly and get them engaged through one of our forms or contacts or book a meeting, book a demo, so that we can get them to the next round and in front of our experts to address their questions.
Love that. That's awesome. Any other thoughts on plays or spending money or anything there?
Well, I think in the, market, being in marketing, you always have to be budget conscious. We're always looking at the ROI of everything that we do. And, that ROI could mean different things to different organizations. Sometimes it's like, oh, we got an X amount of, SQLs, or we got X amount of meetings. For us, it's pipeline. Did we generate pipeline? Did it meet our goals? Is it converting into, opportunities and closed won? So just getting leads are not the end all. It's really taking them over into an opportunity stage and a pipeline stage to count anything as successful.
All right, let's get to our next segment, the dust up.
Uh-oh, here comes trouble.
You may have heard that there was a dust up involving yours truly.
And now we've got a wild scrum with fights breaking out all over the place.
And it is getting really ugly as we've got punches and kicks.
Where we talk about healthy tension, whether that's with your board, your sales team, your competitor, or anyone else. Have you had a memorable dust up in your career?
A few. So, any marketer has gone through different campaigns that maybe didn't land as well as expected and didn't get the results as expected. So you do have to just own it. I always say just own that it was a flop and quickly pivot and try a new method. I've learned that, again, at the end of the day, if it's not generating business and it's not generating pipeline, then we need to do something different. We need to pivot quickly. You don't want to carry that on for a long term because you thought it was such a great campaign. But if it didn't work, no one cares. Move on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just move on. So I think, when you accept ownership and accountability, the tension goes away. And now you're all thinking about what can we do better.
All right, let's get to our final segment, Quick Hits. These are quick questions and quick answers.
All right.
Just like how quickly qualified helps companies generate pipeline, tap into your greatest asset, your website, to identify your most valuable visitors and instantly start sales conversations. That's why you use Qualified. Go to qualified.com to learn more. It's quick and easy, just like these questions. Go to qualified.com to learn more. Noreen, are you ready?
Go for it.
Number one, do you have a hidden talent or skill that's not on your resume?
Yes, I'd like to think I have a few things that are not on my resume. I'm a great cook and I'm an avid traveler. So I've been to 36 countries so far, trying to learn a variety of cooking and different foods and learning as I go.
Amazing. Do you have a favorite book, podcast, TV show that you'd recommend?
One of my favorite books, it's an older book, but it's still very valid in my professional and personal life. It's called The Pursuit of Wow from Tom Peters.
Mm.
I don't know if you've heard of it, but he's certainly come out with other books around the same topic of how do you always pursue that wow factor in everything that you do, whether it's in your personal life and the people around you or your family, friends, community, or in your professional life with your coworkers, your customers, and your superiors, of how to not settle for anything less than excellence.
Do you have a favorite non-marketing hobby that indirectly makes you a better marketer?
I don't know if I call this a hobby, but I like to, entertain quite a bit. I throw a lot of parties and entertain at home for family, friends, and coworkers. I do think it really teaches me how you show up for people, accommodate people from different backgrounds, get engagement from people that may not know each other or at your first time at your party. How do you include them into that discussion and open up that safe space for those conversations to happen? How do you show up for them through these different kind of opportunities to engage and continue to build your relationships? And, if anybody's ever hosted holiday dinners, you certainly know you bring a different level of personalities to the table. So how do you manage and keep that amicable? How do you keep those relationships going even when people vehemently disagree on certain subject matters?
Yeah, that's a great one. If you weren't in marketing at all or business, even, what do you think you'd be doing?
I really love property investments and flipping homes. So I probably would do that full time if I wasn't in marketing. I love the aspects of really seeing the vision of a home that needs some TLC, some love and care, and making it amazing and decorating and bringing it to market.
What's your best advice for a first-time CMO?
Don't be so quick to make big decisions. Take the time to get to know the company, the people, and your customer. I think oftentimes new CMOs start and they want to immediately rebrand or redo the website because they need to make their mark somehow, but they do it too quickly, not knowing really the full scope of the customer base or really understanding the people and the culture.
Well, Noreen, it's been absolutely wonderful chatting with you today. For our listeners, can go to Sada.com to learn about all the cool stuff that they're doing. And it was just, you know, fascinating to hear someone who's so tightly aligned with everything here, with partners, marketing strategy, and everything in between. So thanks again for listening, everybody. Noreen, thanks so much for sharing all those insights. Any final thoughts? Anything to plug?
Thank you. And certainly, you know, for organizations looking to transform in the cloud, Sada's your partner to help you transition through your journey. We're happy to help.
Fantastic. Thanks so much and take care.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks again to our friends at Qualified.com, a conversational sales and marketing platform that transforms the way B2B companies sell. Go to Qualified.com to learn more.